Ladies and gentlemen, we started up at 35,000 feet in the plenary, then we fell to the 35th floor. Things are going to continue to go downhill, I'm afraid, because we're about to go 3.5 foot underground. If you can just imagine waking up tomorrow and turning on your taps and finding that nothing comes out, or even worse, turning on your taps and finding that something comes out but it's going to poison you. The man standing between us and that scenario is going to speak next, David Parsons. David is the manager of emergency management at Sydney Water, and that's an incredibly important role. David also has an illustrious career in resilience management and in various organisations, and actually has awards for integrating some of the emergency management thinking. So he's a man with a very important role. They say that the wars of the future are going to be over water, not about oil. So please give him a big round of welcome, David Parsons.
Thanks a lot. Not exactly how I'm going to focus the talk, though. One of the things I've been very lucky to do for the last 2 years is work on a workforce with the Australian government, investigating why organisations have failures and why you make decisions you do. So now as I look at you across the room today, I see highly rational people when you sit alone. But you're a social animal. You're the animal that shows the whites of your eyes all the time. It's one of our connection points to judging the person around us. And I know that you'll make a different decision in a group because you want to belong. And I know that when you started at your organisation, from day one, that has started to indoctrinate you into a culture which will further impact on those actual choices you make. So what I'm going to do today is go through a couple of case studies for about 12 minutes to get you thinking about why you'll make the wrong decision when it's time. It's interesting listening to Mark speak. It's interesting that actually if you look at US data on plane crashes, 77% of major problems with aircraft occur on the first day the crew have worked together. The team has worked together. In fact, half of those occur on the first flight the team has worked together. So how we work in a team is highly critical as to everything that happens in our organisations. I heard Jackie talk about the rogues. That's an organisational term for a person who was let run free because they were successful for a while. And then when it went wrong, the organisation goes, you're a rogue. But actually what we find from case studies is they're known, they're actually appreciated, until the day they aren't. That's another talk for another day. So let's today though, get you thinking about organisations and people, decisions they make, how they work, and the culture of the organisation that they're in. I want you to imagine you're a train driver working for Union Pacific Railway, and you've got a 100-car coal train, and you've headed off on the same path you've done every day to take those down to the port. On this particular day, car number 57, though, has a fault which can be forecast, can be predicted. We know this will happen from time to time, and the wheel bearing seizes. Now, railways are highly regulated organisations, and train drivers have been well trained, like pilots, to follow regulations and rules. The only problem is car number 57 of this train stops on a wooden bridge coated in creosote. The driver radios and says, I need to move the train. And the train control says, according to rule 107.2b, a driver of train shall not move a train that has a fault until an engineer has come to site to inspect the train. He radios again and goes, but I do need to move the train. And the train controller says, the rules say that a train driver cannot move a train that has stopped with a fault until an engineer has inspected the fault. As a result of that, the bridge is lost and 6 rail cars are lost. But why would a rational person make a decision like that? Because that rational person's been punished before for not obeying the rules. One of our challenges in managing risk is, are all rules good all the time? Let's have a look at that. This is London Underground and King's Cross Station prior to their big fire that they had back in 1987. This is Mariella Santello, a young woman due to be married in only a matter of weeks prior to that date. And she and her fiancé went to the railways and boarded a train at 7:30pm, or meant to board a train at 7:30pm on that night. Unfortunately, that night, things didn't go well. 31 people died. In fact, Mariella said, I turned around to see if Marco, my fiancé, had followed me, but I couldn't open my eyes. I tried to shout his name, but I couldn't even open my mouth. How can that happen to somebody? London Underground, though, in the previous 5 years, had 400 smoulderings. You see, smoulderings aren't fires. We can use that term with management and it doesn't alarm them. 400 smoulderings. Rules weren't enforced because rules upset customers. You couldn't tell them they can't smoke on the ground, although that was the rule. But management didn't support you if you enforced the rule. The ticket sellers were non-uniformed staff. And they watched from their ticket booths as the uniformed staff ran around madly and saying, "Aren't they having a bad day out there? We can't help them because we're not uniformed." See, organisations set the culture of how we behave when things go wrong. At the inquiry, the safety manager said, "I'm only responsible for staff safety, not me for passenger safety. We stick to our silo when it suits us." The lady on the back row, second from the left, was to be the first school teacher in space. Krista was meant to be the great emblem of great American progress. And the Challenger craft took off on the 28th of January 1986. We all know that that didn't go very well, as the rocket booster seals failed, causing an explosion, and they all died. But what was interesting, though, about that launch was that the night before, there was the typical pre-launch phone conference, over 70 people, and one of the problems that was already being raised is that these people were not in a room together. They were dispersed. What did we know about that? We know that you interpret lots of data from the faces you see. You interpret whether that person's confident or not. All these sort of things. These guys are from top left, Roger Boisley, Larry Malloy in the middle, and Joe Kilminster down the bottom right corner, all who worked with Morton Thiokol. And these three engineers said this launch would not go ahead. We're actually going to launch 15 degrees below safe levels. We actually have had previous failures, but thank goodness they weren't big failures, and we don't believe this is going to work. So there was a break in the phone conference, and their manager, Jerry Mason, whose photo is not on the web, put it on silent and said, "Guys, you sound like engineers here. But think about management. Think about the new contract we're trying to orchestrate with NASA. Do you think this is good management speak, saying not to launch?" He took the phone off silent and they continued the conversation. They were silenced and they quit soon after launch. And in fact, Roger in the top left corner spends his time now talking at university courses to managers and to engineers about ethics and values. Put your management hats on. Another 7 astronauts died. This is Vicky and Sarah Hicks. Vicky and Sarah went to Hillsborough Soccer Stadium on the 15th of April 1989 to see a soccer game, something that you'd think would be safe to do. On this particular day, for reasons that aren't known, the crowd was late arriving. But the game has to start on time. This is what Mark talked about, organisational values. What's important? What's important with a soccer game is starting on time because it's paid for by national media. So the crowds were late. The police commander made a decision. He said, "Open the gates, let them surge in. We must start the game on time," knowing your priorities. As a result of that, at the front of the crowd could be heard screams as the crowd crushed forward, crushing 96 people to death. 79 of those were under 30 years of age. And Tony Bland died 4 years later when his mother agreed to turning off his life support system. And the inquiry found that young constables heard the screaming. And the young constable said, "We're not empowered to change the directions that we're given. We are trained to obey orders, and the orders were to let the crowd through unimpeded, to get the game to start on time, and we followed our orders." 96 people died. And as a follow-up to that, in September 2012, the UK government came out and actually openly said the police had covered up the cause of the event. They'd actually gone around and done an investigation of people in that front of the stadium and were able to show that a number of the young people had bad backgrounds and blamed the deaths on them. There's now another inquiry in UK government about that. Culture, decision-making, obeying rules. Not all rules and not all directions are right. BP, Deepwater Horizon. We could talk about that for a number of days too. But I just want to talk about a CEO who gets in front of a media and says to those thousands of people who now don't have a livelihood, who now can't pay their home loans, whose lives are falling apart, and he says in front of the media, "I'd like my life back. life isn't fair. I used to go sailing every weekend, but I can't do that. Well, now, just maybe, Tony, that was a bad decision. Why would a CEO paid more than $20 million a year make a comment like that? Because I'd argue that was his true belief. This was an inconvenience to him. And he didn't think before he spoke. And the share price dove on that one comment. You could see it fall down. We make these decisions because these are our core beliefs. We say them and you're in all sorts of trouble. Columbia, 1st of February 2003. David, Rick, Laurel, Kalpana, Mikhail, William, Elan, in the Columbia spacecraft, and they take off. On that day, though, a small piece of foam breaks off the aircraft, and the engineers said, well, it's only a piece of foam, that won't cause very much damage. There's a couple of engineers said, we better check this out. Now, just think about this. The only problem is, a little bit of foam doesn't make much damage until you're doing 3,010 kilometres an hour. And the inquiry came out and said the foam did it, but the institution allowed it. You see, there was a group of damage specialists who tried to get the message up saying, we have a problem, NASA. The problem is, then you just read the right-hand side there, go down to about, or just up on the top, the mission management team chair was Linda Hamm. Linda was a pretty fierce person. Wouldn't want to meet Linda in a side lane, I don't think, after dark. And the question was, Linda, how did you find out things were going wrong? And she said, well, people would tell me. Well, how do you know they'd tell you? And she had no answer to that. You see, we need to have psychological safety. We need to know that someone's going to listen to raise issues. Now, these guys sent numerous emails saying, we need to get photographs, we need to check the aircraft, and they're all gone, no, we don't. No, we don't. You're raising concerns that just aren't important. And this comes back to NASA language. So your organisations use language. Remember the smoulderings in London Underground? They used to call things out of family, in family. Well, bits of family had broken off before. It had moved from being unusual to out of family to in family. Therefore, it wasn't a risk. But no one had really thought about what that term was sending to managers in their actual decision making. Last story to finish up. I want you to take you back to the Katrina event in 2005. And on the 24th of August 2005, Walmart mobilised its managers across the US to respond to the hurricane, which was still 5 days away. Great decision making, maybe, great understanding about risk. The US Navy woke up to the problem on the 26th of August. And in fact, Federal Emergency Management Agency woke up on the 28th of August to what was going on. Again, understanding problems, understanding risk. But let's have a look at some of the decisions that were made. Think about why people make decisions like this. This is a picture that was on TV on that first day showing what was going on in New Orleans. This is Matthew Broderick. He was the Brigadier General in charge of the Homeland Security Operations Centre. He had 17 reports come in from the Red Cross, National Weather Service, Coast Guard, I could go on, saying that the levees had breached. The people were cursing George Bush because he didn't seem to know what was going on. Well, Matthew went home that night purposely not telling George Bush those levees had breached. Why? Because he said those 17 reports could be wrong. They're not an authoritative agency. The authoritative agency would be the US Corps of Engineers. They'll be there tomorrow and we'll have a look. You see, he was an intelligence officer and they learnt, trained in their cultural attributes to validate data. Just like mathematicians always know one and one is two. I don't believe that, but they do because I believe in randomness. So how people's trained to think will influence their decisions that they make. As a result of that, what were some of the things that happened? This is Louis Armstrong International Airport. And these were the victims, on these stretchers waiting to be flown out. And so they said, yes, we can get these people out of here, we'll fly them out, we'll get some planes in. The first plane arrived, but no one could be evacuated. Why was that? Well, because the Transport Safety Administration had no staff to do the screening. Okay, we'll wait 4 hours, we'll fly a plane load of those guys in. So they arrive, more planes arriving to take all these victims out. We can't process them. Why not? There's no generators to operate the scanners because these people could be carrying handguns or, you know, machine guns, dangerous weapons. So then they waited for the generators to arrive. The generators arrived, the scanners were set up, the TSA staff were ready to go. And they waited another 6 hours because they said, but we don't have any US armed marshals. What if one of these people was to get up and charge at the cabin? 2 days later, the first evacuee was flown out on their stretcher. Are those decisions rational? Well, they are. If you've been trained, that's the way it has to work. That's the rules. You haven't been trained concepts like goal sacrifice. As you know, many people are homeless in New Orleans. And this is a picture of 20,000 trailer homes parked in an airfield on $9 million worth of gravel. You see, when they bought these for New Orleans, someone didn't read the rule. And the rule said, trailer homes going into floodplains must have wheels on them. These had bedrooms, bathrooms, but no wheels on them. But no one bothered to ask was, why did the rule say that? Well, the rule said that because it was designed for river floodplains, not for swamp floodplains, where they'd be washed down the river and hit a town further downstream. New Orleans doesn't have that. It feels like a bathtub. So the question I wanted to get you thinking about is decision-making. After many days of bad news, George Bush had to do something, and he flew in Tad Allen, Admiral Tad Allen. And Tad turned up at the New Orleans Operations Centre, and he said, why is this not working? I have the best people from across the US here, hundreds of government officials, and I'm in chaos. And he walked around the room that first morning and he said, I think I get it. And he got up on a stage like this with 625 people in the audience and he said, I just want to address you about the operation that you're working on today and tomorrow and next week. And I only have really one sentence to say to you. From this point on, your decision making is going to be value based. I want you to pretend that the person you're making this decision about is your mum, your dad, your brother and your sister. That's really all I've got to say. Let's make it happen. What was interesting, what did the people do? They cheered. Because for once they knew the decision making, the value base on the decisions that had to be made. And he said, if someone doesn't agree with your decision, tell them to talk to me. Tell them Tad said to do it that way. Just in finishing up, I just want to say, Roy Edward Disney, whose uncle was Walt Disney, once said, and I've heard already in this presentations this morning these themes coming through. In the end, it's those red flag conditions that scare me about risk. It's the failure to accept that your people need to know what's the value base of the decision making. What rules can we forfeit? What rules can't we forfeit? What's the goal sacrifice? I know that's why I only fly Qantas, because I know there's one goal they don't sacrifice, the safety goal. And when Sully Sullenberger flew that plane onto the Hudson River, he said, every day of my life, I'm compliant to death. I leave the plane on time. I'm not allowed to have a rough flight. Not allowed to use too much fuel. But he said, when that happened on that actual day, he said, I knew there was only one goal I couldn't forfeit. And that was the goal to get everyone off that plane alive. And women would write him and say, what did my husband think before our plane crashed when he was a pilot? And he wrote back and said, they all thought the same thing, madam. They thought, I'm getting everyone off this plane alive. And Sully made a decision that day. He walked down the aisle of that plane twice, checking whether there was anyone still on the plane. Why? Because that was his belief of his priority, was his customers and their safety. So there's red flag conditions. Psychological safety. Are you really allowed to raise bad issues? Does bad news ever get anywhere or get suppressed? What's the culture that makes you act differently to the way you act at home? How empowered do your people really feel to raise concerns? Do people know what goals can be sacrificed when the chips are down? I just wanted to really say to you today that after those case studies, every one of those case studies were based on someone's bad decisions. Management, staff, who made decisions based on your organisation's indoctrination of them in the way they have to think. And I'm not sure I see too many risks. I'm not saying you don't have it. I don't see too many risk shells that have culture properly rated for the risk level I believe it has causes the organisation. Good luck.